Yay!
Yo.
Well, we have two
Awesome.
more voices here
I
today.
know. Hello.
Yes, welcome back to our sixth episode. This episode will, I guess we kind of want to touch upon like Asian Americans in film and just like the wider film entertainment industry in general. So we have our two friends from Pineapple Headache Podcast, and they
Hello.
are, well, they were
Hello.
film majors in college. And
Wow,
so,
past tense.
who would be the best people to talk about this other than them? Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, do you guys want to introduce yourselves? It's a brief introduction. We can get more into it later.
Okay. Hello. I am Madison. I'm one of the new mysterious voices. And I was a screenwriting major at LMU, but I also had an Asian Pacific American Studies minor. Yay.
Yay. That was good.
Very
Was
brief.
it?
Very brief.
Hello, my name is Christiane. I am also a film major.
Work.
I was a film major, but I studied film production, so the actual making of movies and TV shows and stuff. And I am from Houston, Texas. And what else did you say?
Oh, I
I
didn't even say
took,
where I was from. I'm from
oh,
Sacramento.
okay.
Lady Bird. Good.
We were all friends in college. That's how we know each other.
That
That's
is
good to
true.
know.
Yeah, so we usually do a little check-in of how everybody's week has been going. Who would like to start? I can start. I bought a Lego set and I'm very happy. So I think I want to spend
Wow.
today building it. And I have a lot of homework, but who cares about that? It's fine.
How am I doing? I feel like this past week has been more chill. But then I also have a lot of like projects and finals coming up. But this week I actually got to catch up with two friends. One friend from Hong Kong. I haven't talked to her in like many months. So it was just pretty nice to be able to talk to her again and just catch up on how each other's are doing. And then yesterday, like I told you, I also caught up with Dion, which was also really nice. And honestly, I don't know what else has been happening in my life. Well, like I just had like a huge like career mindset shift after talking to my professor. So like originally I was just gonna apply to whatever marketing job that I could find, and then like later on I'll go into creative. But then like she told me that not to do that. And then she told me I should just like go straight to creative. So now like I'm kind of shifting to applying to creative jobs. And then I think I'm also gonna like take classes after I graduate. So yeah, well, it's my week.
Ew.
Wow, that's so exciting.
Wow,
Yeah.
flex those Photoshop skills. Is that what you mean by creative? Like what? Yeah, flex those Photoshop skills.
Those Canva
Graphic
skills.
design.
Yeah.
Canva. My
Skill.
week was I don't know. All my weeks blur together these days. What did I even do this week?
That.
We got
Oh, I
tattoos
got tattoos.
yesterday.
Oh, we hung out twice. Me and Christian hung out twice. And then yes, we got a tattoo yesterday. I was trying to think of like before yesterday, like the whole week. I also hung out with Fati on like Monday or Tuesday, so that was nice. We got to catch up, hung out with Christian twice, and then we got tattoos yesterday, which was exciting
Do you want
and
to
kind
share
of
what you
hurt.
got?
Yeah, show us.
I got Pikachu on my wrist, or just Pikachu's head. And it still kind of hurts.
I got the flower from Hadestown, the musical.
What else did you do
On.
this week, Christiane?
I am just been, or like earlier in the week, I've just been working on my own stuff. And then, like Wednesday, I had family fly in, so I've been taking them around. So we went to Hollywood Park and had a picnic with the Hollywood sign in the background. And
Wow.
then on yesterday we went to Little Tokyo, But it was kind of nice. Like, it seemed like life was kind of back to normal. And then I came back here, and then I went to go get our tattoos with Madison.
So, Summer, do you want to ask her this or that?
Yes.
Since you thought of it, and it's, I guess, spicy?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
It's spicy for me. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. So, this week, this or that is WandaVision or Falcon and Winter Soldier? Which one do you like better?
Is it spicy? Mm.
I guess that's pretty spicy because very right now.
Kind of mm-hmm.
So far, which one do you like better?
I have an answer already. Mine is WandaVision. I think I just like the more the contained story, like very contained story of it. I kind of like, honestly, Falcon and the Winter Soldier has been kind of like has kind of been hit or miss for me for a lot of episodes and scenes, like in
That's
terms
fair.
Of storytelling. But like WandaVision, I mean, even though it's based on original comic, I like the whole thing of like, here's this character trying to deal with the trauma of losing her loved one and like trying to go through all that. Yeah, so that's my answer.
How about you, Madison?
I think I would also have to say WandaVision, but I've had problems with both.
Yeah.
I like the sitcom format of WandaVision.
Oh, that too, yeah.
For, like, the first half. And then it was kind of losing me in the second half with, like, just... It was, like, I feel like it's the same thing with any limited series. I always get to a point where I'm like, okay, how is this going to resolve in, like, you know, just a couple of episodes? And I feel like WandaVision's resolution, it went from feeling really fresh and original with the sitcom gimmick thing to like the last episode just kind of felt like a Marvel movie, and I was just like, okay.
And yeah, I also think like it wasn't tied up, like it didn't resolve itself.
It wasn't resolved really well, and I don't even really know if like Wanda got the development she was supposed
to
get. And then with Falcon and Winter Soldier, like I've really enjoyed seeing Sam and Bucky's characters. But that's my exact problem, is that I feel like half the time, it's not even about them. It's, like, about any other character who isn't them. It's about Zemo or, like, the new Cap guy or, like, the Flag Smasher people or, like, insert literally anybody else here. And it's, like, there's, like, too much going on. I don't know what's going on. How is that going to resolve in one more episode?
Yeah, me and Madison are, like, worried because we're, like, this is not going to, like, tie well together if we're going to wrap up, like, five different people, because also Sharon is also in the story.
Oh yeah, I forget about her sometimes.
I bet she's the power broker, but that's a separate.
Oh my god, that's what George said.
I think she's the power broker too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you guys?
My answer is not that, like in depth. I'd be like, mine is. I would say WandaVision because I felt more intrigued to come back for more every week. I feel like for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I'm not. But I think it was really creative. And the way that they filmed it and the way that they, produced it was just really cool. It was so new and refreshing. Even though, like, same as you, Madison, and towards the end, I was like, what is this witchcraft? What is happening?
Yeah, the whole witch fight. I was like, okay, now this feels like a Marvel movie.
But that's so true that, like, where's the resolvement? Like, after I finished WandaVision, I was like, what is happening? I was still confused. I wanted closure, but I didn't get it from WandaVision. I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier is more lighthearted and just more easy to understand. But I would say WandaVision just for like the how they produced it and the way they went.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm gonna be the one who stands out here. I think I'm gonna pick Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think first, because like when I first started watching WandaVision, I didn't really understand what was happening, and I guess because I didn't grow up in like, I don't know, like American culture, like I'm not very familiar with like all the sitcom stuff, so I didn't get like what's so funny about it, but I thought it was super creative in the way that they did it. However, I like Falcon and Winter Soldier more because like what you said, it's easier to understand. I also think that the questions and like the theme that they're exploring in the film is very interesting. Like they're also kind of dealing with grief and also the consequences after the blip.
Well,
that was a long this or that. It's okay. It was important to get out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, we know that you both are film students.
If you could not tell from that whole discussion about two TV shows.
Exactly. So I guess, like, it's important to get to know you guys a little bit. I mean, we know you guys, but for everyone who's listening to our podcast, why you guys chose film school. And you guys also touch upon this in your podcast a lot. But maybe briefly, like, why you guys chose film school and, like, especially being at LMU, such a, like, white-dominated school, and also in film, like, how was that experience, I guess?
I can go first, then. I didn't know that I was gonna go into film, really, until sophomore year of high school. I feel like I kind of had those, one of those things I feel like happens to a good amount of, like, Asian Americans here, where it's, like, parents want them to do something, and then they end up doing something else. So, like, I thought I was going to end up working in the medical field in the future, and then I picked up a camera in high school, and then I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. So it was literally for, like, class projects, where I, like, would pick up, like, my mom's old, like, Canon PowerShot camera, and then I taught myself iMovie, and then from there I just started making my own stuff. And then I ended up at LMU's film school somehow, because it's a really good film school. I ended up there with no portfolio. And I feel like film school was a really tough time for me to, like, understand what I want out of film and, like, who I am as a filmmaker and stuff, because I want to write and direct my own things. But yeah, I feel like I've said this on my, like, on our podcast, like, in the past, but, like, for me to even be able to say that my favorite movie is Spy Kids, I feel like is a very big thing for me to do, because it's like, okay, like, now I'm starting to understand my voice as a filmmaker a lot more and trying to understand, like, what I like and don't like. AKA, I don't really care for a lot of what's considered, like, cult classic, like, cinema type stuff. So if anyone wanted to talk to me about Quentin Tarantino, I wouldn't care.
How about you, Madison?
Well, I was already into LMU. I was like, because I had a cousin who went to LMU, and because it was in LA, I was like, oh, okay, that sounds like a good school. So then it was more of just me trying to find something to do, like, what I would want to do at LMU. And I really liked writing in high school, and so I was like, well, they don't have a creative writing major, but maybe I can do screenwriting. And then I just went for it and I got in, so I just kind of fell into that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And, like, it's interesting how, like, LMU is a PWI, because I think for me it's actually the most diverse school I've ever been to, because just every other school I've gone to in my life has been that much more predominantly white. So, like, LMU diversity is the most diversity I've ever known in an academic setting. And yeah, so film school was quite a time, being sometimes the only woman, the only LGBTQ plus person, the only Asian person or person of color, or all of the above at the same time in, like, a class, because they were so small. And just having to, like, you know, when you would write stories about personal experiences that are in the minority, you have to, like, make it accessible to the, like, the majority in the room, which was very exhausting, but I guess that's how the film industry works, so.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention being, like, the whole, I mean, I feel like the whole reason why film school was such, like, a thing for me to go through is not, I mean, aside from also, like, the snobbish cinema people, it's, like, I feel like it's also rooted in kind of, like, race and, like, accessibility to things, because I feel like a lot of the movies that people did like, I feel like I didn't have access to as much as I was growing up. And so trying to, like, navigate that space and be like, okay, well, like, I am not, like, I feel like a lot of our classmates were in the wealthier white spaces and backgrounds, so I was like, I cannot really relate to the space that I am in. So it was a lot of trying to adapt those situations. And I think by doing that too, it helped me understand, it helped me kind of create my own film curriculum, because it's like, okay, like, what are films I like actually want to watch and pay attention to? And it's like, while I am grateful for like the films that I have been given the privilege to watch, like very old cinema and like foreign cinema that I'm not used to seeing, it's like, okay, like, this isn't really much of my jam, so it's like, what is for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, like, I know you guys have to make your own films at some point, and I know, like, even for people around me who are film students that I knew, they had to fundraise themselves and like find their own like resource, like money resources to produce it, right? Like, the school doesn't give it to you.
Yeah, the school doesn't give it to us, because it's like, for other schools, like, I think USC does this, well, they'll be able to fund your film, but they own it. Like, they own the property, so you can't really use it for anything. Like, they can do whatever they want with it, you don't. But for LMU, it's, like, quite the opposite. Like, you have to fund your own film, and then you'll be able to keep it. Like, you can send it to festivals and whatnot. But I think part of the thing with that is that it also exposes kind of, like, the different socioeconomic backgrounds that people come from, because like there are people who are like, oh yeah, like I have like $10,000 like ready to go to just spend on a film. And it's like, a lot of the time money doesn't equal better, like a better story, like mm-hmm. And I've seen it happen a lot where it's like everything looks really good and everything's like has like really cool shots and stuff, but at the end of the like the short film I'll watch, I'll be like, wow, I didn't understand what happened mm-hmm. at all, like what was the whole point of it. And so I think
money that's can't buy a good story.
Yeah, so I think like that started really drilling into my head of like, okay, like if I'm gonna use the resources that I have, then I have to tell a good story with like actual themes and messages that I want to put across. So I feel like for the films that I have made, I've crowdfunded for, and like I would use a very modest budget with what I have, because it's like, again, like you can't, I feel like film school is at the beginning of like our careers for me in Madison, so like now is the time to make the mistakes. So why would I want to like make like a real, why would I want all this money to this like money to make mistakes that I could
$10,000 mistake?
Yeah, and it's like, well, if I'm gonna make something, like I don't want to increase like the costs of all of these things. So yeah, I did that, and it's like, I at the end of the day, all of these are just like learning opportunities. So,
yep,
it's mm-hmm. all about slowly building up. And plus, I think that having limits to your projects can help you be a lot more creative.
Yeah. How about Madison? How is it like being a screenwriting major? Like, how's it? I'm like just interested in knowing what's the difference between film production and screenwriting, and like mm-hmm. how is the difference in your experiences?
My junior year was about writing a feature-length film, which was I was not good at. That was so long, I hated it, so I was like, I'm not doing that again. So then you also have to take like at least one, I think, TV writing class, and I was like, I'm just going to take all of these because I do not want to write a film. Like, that was too much. It's 120 pages. You have to structure the whole thing to make sense. And I was just like, no, this ain't it. I can't do this. My brain can't do this. Because, like, the way I always approached writing was, like, I would hardly ever do any kind of, like, outlining or, like, planning. I'm, like, one of those people who would just open Microsoft Word and just start writing and just figure it out as I go along. And then I just kind of work, you know, backwards from there. So having to do like the more formal, like, you know, go through the outline process and writing a whole like detailed synopsis, I was like, I can't do this anymore for like a film. So I just took a lot of TV writing classes after that. So my actual senior thesis was a like sitcom pilot. So that was fun. But then I also got to do the thing with Christiane's side. So that was also fun.
Talking about like
the people
in the class, it's kind of weird how like the stories that you want to tell aren't going to be like, I don't know if the word is like well received by people. Like, sometimes people will just not get it.
Mm-hmm. Probably because, ask too many questions.
Yeah, where it's like they have a very kind of like fixed perspective on how things work and people are, and it's like, no. And it's just kind of like, no, it's not how it works. And I feel like that goes into the whole broader conversation of like representation, where like they see people and certain stories in a very like fixed, small, narrow scope. And it's like, we're all people. Like, we can do, there's life outside of, you know, like being like Asian American. Like, it's kind of like interwoven in your life, but it's like, oh, here's my single identity. Like, I am an Asian American, so like I must be like the smart genius, or like have like the strictest parents, which is true for like some people. But like, there's so many different life experiences that people have lived, so like maybe you shouldn't dismiss like what people want to write. I don't know. That is
intersectionality.
That is to say, though, like, I don't know why some people were like, I don't really get your story, but then I like listen to their stories, I'm like, your story is literally the most shallow thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I don't know, people were just like, or their movie taste was so like, everybody just wants Quentin Tarantino or like, I don't know, indie, white-centric indie films.
And yeah, it was, like very, okay. It's, like, no one wanted to say, like, oh, I don't know, like, movies that actually made sense that you would, like, you know, like, movies you'd actually, like, see growing up. Like, it seemed like everyone wanted to seem very intellectual.
Apparently, everybody was watching Quentin Tarantino at age 5.
Yeah.
Apparently. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't like met that many people from film school, but I can think of a few people that are the exact person you're talking about, and it's so annoying.
Yeah, and it's anyways. Like people would be like, oh my gosh, like my favorite film is like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and I'm like, okay, like I watched it and it was good, but I was like so confused. Like, it's a very like deep movie, but you know, I feel like the movies that you like are an indication of who you are as a person. So like, I would assume that certain movies, like certain people would have certain taste in movies because of like the themes presented and explored, because they touch upon your life as well, but apparently not for a lot of people.
Yeah, I've never been able to super get into like that avant-garde or like things where you have to really think super hard about it. Like, I don't know, I just like, I don't know, that's just not my thing. And also because like movies are also like supposed to be kind of entertaining at least a little bit, and if I can't feel really entertained, I'm probably not going to be super into it. Or like there was also like, you know, this whole like kind of bias against like the, like, you know, the blockbuster films, the mainstream films, like the Marvel movies and like this and that. Like people were like, no, those are, and I agree that Marvel movies are very formulaic. I do agree that most of them are the same thing regurgitated, but like I still think they can be really, I think some of them still are really good on their own and like, you know, stand out. But like, and there is something to be said about like, you know, the whole Disney like film industry oligopoly situation, because that's like an actual thing. But then like there's still like creative people involved, like, you know, in like Marvel movies and like big blockbusters. I mean, just like look at Black Panther. Like, I think everybody could agree that was an amazing film, and like it was a Marvel movie. There's like this whole hierarchy of like you have to like the really complicated, hard to digest art to like be a real film student or a real like creative.
Yeah, and I think I also just want to add on when it comes to like, well, like people's like TV taste, I feel like whenever we talk about TV, a lot of people will talk about kind of like very like 1-hour dramas, like very serious like TV content, when I feel like, I think like when it comes to like me and Madison's taste, like I feel like we've grown up with a good amount of like sitcoms and like more like lighthearted like multicam content that I feel like a lot of film students don't really talk about. And I feel like both me and Madison appreciate the craft of a sitcom a lot more, which is why I think like WandaVision was so fun for me. It's like, oh, I recognize like what sitcom mm-hmm. they're referencing, because it's like,
oh my god, you know, all those film people who are all like, wow, multicam sitcoms are so low budget and low effort, blah, blah. You know, they were like probably like frothing at the mouth over WandaVision, yeah, like being like, oh my god, this is so good. Like, nah, I remember when you were like, multicam is lazy or whatever. And it, like,
it's like one, it's kind of interesting though, because it's like most sitcoms are, you know, I feel like more in the accessible side because they were on like cable. Or, like, mm-hmm. not cable, but, like, just, like...
Network TV.
So, it's, like, you could just turn it on and you can just watch it there. Where I feel like when you have, like, more premium channels, that's where more of the one-hour serious sitcoms and stuff were. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Like, the HBO-type content.
Yeah, and it's, like, I didn't really grow up with that until now when streaming became a whole thing. But mm-hmm. growing up, it was, like, yeah, I would just turn on the TV and just, like, watch a lot of, like, you know, like... sitcoms like Malcolm in the Middle or like the George Lopez Show, like all of that stuff, and like that's what I would grow up watching, like before school and like after school. So it's kind of interesting how people are like,
well, now I just thought about it with the whole WandaVision thing. I bet so many people were like, oh my god, this is, and I'm like, where was this appreciation for the sitcoms? Mm-hmm. What is this?
Yeah,
okay, I'm watching you.
Yes, expose them.
Mm-hmm. Honestly,
I think you also touch upon how, like, in a film school that is predominantly white, a lot of the times, even, like, in the film industry, too, like, a lot of times you have to, like, target your content towards, like, white audience so then they understand what you're trying mm-hmm. to say. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you navigate through that when you're producing your own creative project?
I don't know. I kind of, well, like when professors often will ask me when I'm pitching a project or like showing like what my short films are, they'll be like, okay, who's your audience? And I kind of hate that question because yeah. it's like, why would you think that I'm like, when it comes to like making a film for me, like part of it is that I'm making it for myself because it's based on my own life. So it's like, I don't really want to think about like what are people going to perceive of this story and like thinking about all the different backgrounds and stuff, because at the end of the day I'm just like making what I know. Okay. And it's like, if like, it's kind of weird because I have to walk this line of like, do they not get it because they don't understand my experience, or do they not get it because it's like filmmaking, like it's on my like filmmaking mistakes that I'm making now. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like mm-hmm. when you're making a film, like your first goal is to be like, is this story clear enough? Like clarity is like the number one thing, like when it comes to like visually making the film, like is the message getting across like right there, anyone can understand it. But like part of the thing is that it's kind of weird to do that when you oftentimes, like when you're in a classroom with predominantly white people who are like, I don't really understand like why this character does this and this, and it's like, well, is it because like I'm just weird, or like they're the weird ones, you know, that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like, I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling now, but the whole thing of like, no, like people not understanding what your experiences are, because again, like they have such a narrow scope of the way the world is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. such a like limited worldview.
Yeah,
I feel like I just kind of am really stubborn with what I do. So like when people would ask questions, I would just keep it the same, because I was like, okay, here's my explanation, and then you can either take it or not. Like I think I mentioned this once on like one of our podcast episodes, but like my feature film that I wrote was like a love story between like two female characters, and like there was no coming out scene. It was just like, you know, two queer women just like living their life, and then they like fell in love with her, but then like people were like, why is there no coming out scene? And I was like, there's like things still happen after a person comes out, you know, that can be completely unrelated to the event of coming out. Like, not everything is Love, Simon, basically. And I was just so taken aback when someone asked that, because I was like, why does there need to be a coming out scene? Like, you can live life and be gay, and like everybody knows you're gay, so then you'll have like your romance with the same sex partner, and then everyone's like, okay, yeah, we know you're gay already, we didn't need to just like reestablish that. I was just so, like, I was just so, like, blown away. Like, the question, like, the fact that it was brought up at all still, like, blows me away. And, like, the person who asked it, like, you know, was not malicious or anything. Was, like, a really kind person. But it's, like, that's just how, like, I guess when you don't really think about other people's experiences, like, you'll, like, kind of sound, like, really dumb, like, asking questions like that. Where it's, like, clear that you don't really think about, like, things past, like, the big, like, not, like, kind of surface level things of that identity, just, like, things that everybody assumes, like, coming out or whatever. Like, there was no really thought beyond that, and I was, like, what? And then also, because, like, all of my content would pretty much feature, like, Asian American characters or, like, other characters of color, but, like, it was, like, it was just, like, it would be stories where the characters just happened to be people of color. Like, I didn't really write in film school, I didn't really write any stories that were about, like, you know, like, kind of how, like, we were just talking about, like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Like, a big part of that story is, like, racial trauma and stuff for, like, Black people, and, like, for Sam Wilson and him, like, overcoming racism. And, like, usually in my stories, I would just be, like, they're just characters of color and they're just living their life, and that wasn't really kind of the focus at all. So I think that kind of made questions also happen less with that, because it was just, like, yeah, do that. So the only... So, like, I mean, but also at the same time, it's, like, the only time I would probably mention that they were, like, a person of color, aside from, like, I don't know, maybe their names appearing ethnic, would just be, like, the first time a character appears in the script is when you, like, describe them. So it'd be, like, oh, here's so-and-so, and they're, like, Filipino. So, but, I mean, I don't know if my classmates are thinking of them as Filipino for the rest of the story, if they're just, like, not thinking about it. So, I don't know, but, yeah, it was just all the stories that everybody else told were just very white-centric. So,
yeah. Like... And it's also, like, I feel like, well, I think this is just a film school thing, but they fall into certain tropes that are, like, cliched and, like, overdone. And I feel like,
yeah,
I see it a lot when it comes to, like, the final showcase, where I'm like, oh, okay, so this, like, stories about, like, substance abuse, stories about, like,
oh my god,
or grandparents dying stories.
No, no, no. My favorite that I always like to complain about is the filmmaking about filmmaking.
Oh yeah, like people will make movies about movies, and there was
one guy. La La Land's about that, right?
Yeah,
like that kind of thing where I'm just like, oh my god, like that's to me, that's always like one of the whitest stories you could ever tell, is the white person trying to get into Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, musician stories. I just feel like, okay, musician stories, as someone who grew up with a parent who is a, like, working musician, I feel like it's, like, always, like, I guess because they always focus on, like, really famous ones or, like, you know, like, the Star is Born or whatever, but I'm just, like, all the musicians I've grown up around because through my dad and stuff are, like, just normal people. Like, I feel like there's this whole glorification of how, like, every musician's living, like, those rock and roll 27 Club people who are, like, doing sex and drugs 24/7, and it's, like, there are people like that, but a lot are not. A lot are, like, and it's not this, like, this whole tortured artist thing of, like, I make art, and now I have all this angst and all these problems because the art tortures my brain, blah, and it's always, like, a white people story, and I'm just, like, I'm tired. How many times have we had this movie? Or, like, A Star is Born has been remade, I think, 4 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we not tired of that yet? I have not watched any of them, and I'm already tired of it. Like, I just, like, it's, like, Hollywood would rather remake the same white-centric story about, I guess, white people suffering through art, I guess, because they're not being oppressed, than, like, you know, uplift new content made by, like, up-and-coming, like, creators of color. Or it's, like, even now with streaming, I feel like white, older, like, white people targeted content, or white, predominantly white people, like, content is, like, kind of become, like, a mainstay in, like, our, like, culture. Like, the fact that Friends was on in the 90s and early 2000s, but if you ask, like, any collective of, like, teens or tweens right now, they might say that that's their favorite show because they watched it on streaming. And it's, like, now those, like, white-centric shows kind of have this staying power where they're just going to stay relevant forever. And then it's, like, newer, original, like, you know, content centering people of color, like, One Day at a Time on Netflix. Like, that does not have the same, that does not get the same reach as Friends, even though Friends is so outdated. So it's just, like, so, like, it's just such a, like, thing to overcome for, like, creators of color, because you're fighting, now it's, like, with streaming, you're also, like, having to, like, beat out, like, this, like, old white people content that I guess is just back forever now because of streaming. Yeah, that was kind of a lot. I just always have rants on hand for
film. We love rants.
Yeah, we love rants.
So, I mean, you kind of touched upon, like, how a lot of the content we have in the entertainment industry is targeted to white audience. And even, I don't know if you guys feel like a lot of the rise in, like, Asian American films, like Crazy Rich Asians and, like, even Disney, right? Like, the new Raya movie is based on East Asian culture and stuff. Do you think that it, I don't know, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like, I'm glad that we're, like, Asian Americans are getting a lot more representation because we have such a bad history with it, with, like, you know, how Yellow Peril, like, influenced the media that people were taking in, like, way back in the day and treating, like, women as this very, like, you know, exotic, like, dangerous woman or this very submissive, like, exotic woman. And, like, that was always a thing with, like, the whole, like, Dragon Lady and the Madam Butterfly stereotypes that we've seen all the way back in the early films that I just don't really want to watch.
Yeah. All the yellow face.
Yeah, all the yellow face and, like, people just having very, again, like, very fixed ideas because, you know, of all of the events happening at the time, you know, like, the whole thing of World War II and the Japanese internments and all that. Like, obviously, like, events influence the media that we watch. The influence the media that is, like, presented at the time, right? So I feel like, yes, representation is good, but I feel like I'd have to critique it in a way it's to, like, how are people being perceived, because I think there's, like, a resurgence, or I don't even know if, like, if it's, like, a resurgence, but a surgence, I guess, of just content of Asian American media being put out, but I feel like it's still kind of limiting in the experiences that are presented, if that makes sense, because, like, you know, I mean, like, all of us are Asian American here, but I feel like there's still a difference between, like, how, you know, like, you, like, Crystal and Summer are, like, East Asian, and, like, me and Madison come more from, like, the Southeast Asian backgrounds, and we're not, like, our parent, or our parents and grandparents are the ones who immigrated there, so, like, we don't really have that much memory of what it's like being, like, you know, Filipino in, like, the Philippines. So there's a lot of, what's the word, like, there are certain perspectives that are often done over and over again when it comes to Asian American media, and I feel like it's still kind of narrow in the way Asian Americans are perceived. Like, the whole thing with, like, Crazy Rich Asians, like, I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed the whole story and stuff. And, like, it was nice to see, like, the theme of, like, family, which I feel like comes up a lot in, like, Asian American stories. Because, you know, the whole thing of different generations trying to wrangle with this feeling of, like, individualism versus collectivism. Because, you know, all of those countries there come from such a, what is the word, like, you're not your own individual. Like, you are a part of something. And I feel like different generations wrangle with it differently, but I don't feel like that is presented in a lot of the content we see today. So, like, with Crazy Rich Asians, I, like, it presented one type of, like, perspective of, like, Rachel, who is this, like, she's, like, second gen, right? Like, second gen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah. Then there's a whole, I don't
know, she's 1.5, I think.
1.5? Yeah.
Like, she was born in China and then came as a baby.
Mm-hmm. And the whole thing of, like, Michelle Yeoh being like, you can't date, you cannot be with my son. And which is, like, I'm sure a thing that happens. But I don't know, like, just the whole thing of, like, I'm looking at this from, like, here is this woman, like, woman looking at a very, like, rich and wealthy lifestyle that I feel like I can't really grasp to. I don't really know where I'm going with this, but, like,
it's okay. I mean, a lot of the content right now in the American, at least American entertainment industry, or, like, Hollywood, is very much geared towards the East Asian experience, right? Like, I feel like a majority of that, it doesn't really touch upon the diversity of the like even the different generations and the experience that each generation has and like the individual circumstances that
it's like part of the issue is that like Asia is not this like one nation, like there's so many different cultures and like countries. Mm-hmm. I feel like kind of the like the Philippines has such a very specific history with itself that I feel like a lot of times when I watch like Asian American content, I'm like, this doesn't really touch upon like my experience and my like history and heritage. Like when I watched Raya, like I enjoyed it, like it was a good story and I had good themes, but when it came to the representation of like, oh, like here's like Southeast like Filipino culture being presented, it's like I didn't really feel that sense of it because it was like a mishmash of everything put together. And like yeah. Southeast Asia is so diverse in its culture with like Vietnamese culture and like Thai culture, and like they're all not the same, you know?
What about you, Madison?
I have so many opinions on this because yes, I agree that it's good that there's a lot more representation happening. But I agree with everything Christiane said because I think it's still very, like, limited. Like, with Crazy Rich Asians, it's the whole, like, rich, wealthy people thing, too. Or I have a friend from Singapore, and I talked to her about it, and she was like, yeah, I mean, that's not an accurate representation of Singapore either because it's just the super wealthy.
Oh, my God, can I say something about Crazy Rich? Like, because you asked your friend from Singapore, right? You know how one of the brothers... one of the friends is from Hong Kong and he lived in that huge mansion. I watched that scene. I was like, that's not how Hong Kong is like. What is a huge like, two-story mansion? Well, I don't think we have space for that.
Yeah, because I think that was a similar thing with like Singapore. Like, I mean, obviously I've never been to Singapore, but from my understanding, it is very similar to like Hong Kong with like, you know, it's a very small area. So I think there are like the wealth, like in Singapore, like the fact that like in Crazy Rich Asians, there are wealthy people who live in like huge houses. Like I think there is some of that in Singapore, but it's like literally a vast majority of people are just living in apartments, like, you know, because it's like very similar to like Hong Kong in that sense. But like, so it's like only showing that very select part of Singapore and like I guess East Asian cultures. But yeah, I think a lot of it, like, because I think a lot of like East Asian representation will come at the expense of like Southeast Asian representation or like other areas of Asia, like, or even like Ali Wong has like that one comedy bit she would do about how like East Asians are like fancy Asians and Southeast Asians are like jungle Asians and stuff. And it's like, so it's like clearly this is like coming from, I'm sure, like, I mean, I'm not from Asia, and the only place I've been to in Asia is Japan, but it wouldn't surprise me if like there is like, you know, kind of that, I think, generally like looking down upon of like people from Southeast Asian countries, because I think a lot of times like there'll be like working class immigrants from Southeast Asian countries like living in East Asian countries. So I know that's already kind of a thing. So, and then that kind of, I guess, carried over with people who immigrated here. And it's like at the end of the day, it's like I feel like it's always just like, you know, whether it's like Ali Wong's bit or whatever, like anyone's just trying to put someone below them because then that brings them like closer to whiteness and like farther from the oppression. But it's like, you know, it's not gonna save you anything at the end of the day. And then it's like, I feel like with Disney, like I, like everybody knows, I really enjoyed Moana and I really liked Raya too, but it's like they're both like pretty bad with the fact that they just kind of mashed up a bunch of cultures from like these huge diverse like areas of the world to try to like do like all birds with one stone type of thing with the representation. And it's like, that's not how representation works, because it's like, you know, like I think the only Filipino thing I've seen people talk about as a riot is like a stick that she fought with, and that's like it. So I guess the stick represented me, I don't know. But yeah, other than that, I was just kind of like, she looks brown, so I guess that's cool because my family members are brown. But like, other than that, it wasn't really like, wow, my culture and stuff. So it's like, it feels kind of lazy when they do that and not really like intentional. And also, I can't remember who was like, you know, directing and writing Raya, but I don't think it was like exclusively Southeast Asian people, and the cast only had one Southeast Asian person on the cast,
the main character. I saw that the Adele Lim was one of the writers who wrote Raya, who also wrote Crazy Rich, the script for Crazy Rich.
I was also gonna say tea on that with her.
Okay.
Oh.
Because Crazy Rich Asians, like, that was co-written by Adele Lim and I think a white dude.
Oh yeah, that whole thing.
Where's Crazy Rich Asians 2? Everybody probably wants to know. Well, it's because they did not equally pay Adele Lim and the white dude. They paid the white dude more, even though they like co-wrote the script or whatever. And they were gonna keep doing that for the second one. So she was like, "You need to pay me equal. I'm gonna walk." And they refused. So she walked. So they don't even have like a writing team ready to go. So I have no idea what's happening with that project, or if it's just gonna be like the Divergent movie series, or just stays unfinished, or what. Oh. But like, that's just so like it's like. I feel like when it's like stuff like that, or the way that Disney just mashes up cultures, it's like, okay, how much of it is because somebody genuinely wants to represent a cult, like people who have been so unrepresented, versus how much of it is like they recognize that people want representation, so they recognize like the marketability and profitability of that, so they're like, oh well, we can like profit off of this, so if we just put in bare minimum effort, where like, you know, maybe the casual viewer won't think about it and like we'll just consume it and be like, oh my gosh, like this is great, like then they're just gonna do that instead of like, you know, go the whole mile to like actually be like, you know, full representation. Because then it's like, I feel like also a lot of times like things that have like characters of color in it, that doesn't necessarily reflect what it looks like behind the scenes, like who was directing, who was writing and stuff. And it's like, if there aren't, like, my thing is always, like, from, like, a labor standpoint, especially now I've been from film school, it's, like, to me, like, representation, I think one of the things that really should be central to the conversation is, like, are people of color getting paid work? Because just because you have a couple of actors of color on a show does not mean that writers of color are getting work, or that directors of color are getting work, or other, like, crew members of color are actually getting work, even though there are plenty of people of color trying to get this work in Hollywood. But it's like, if they aren't getting that opportunity, or that, like, you know, like paid gig, like then is that really like representation? Like, what is that really representing? Because then it's just really about, like, you know, someone at the top is making a bunch of money and like the people of color in Hollywood just kind of stay at the bottom. Like, that's all this like feels like is really happening. And it's like, so now it's like getting to this point where it's kind of up to like the few people of color who do get to make it, it's like they have to like, you know, kind of like turn back and try to like uplift everybody with them, put all their own resources into like uplifting all people of color and stuff. And it's like, you know, like whether have like some celebrities of color do that better or worse than others, but it's like, I feel like the real burden of that should be less resting with like, you know, these really rich white people that sit at the top of Hollywood that are like not doing anything. So, like, it's, like, at that point, there's only so much that, like, the few successful people of color who aren't even near that level of wealth, like, there's only so much they could do if those people at, like, the top are, like, not doing anything.
I know that, like, for Coco, the movie that Disney put out, they did. I mean, it is good in terms of representation, but like the culture and the storyline and stuff, but I know that the town that they based Coco off of, I think they just went in and then they interviewed people there and then they didn't give them any sort of credit, any sort of like payment or anything. And I'm like, so you're just benefiting off of this culture that you're basing your movie off of, like that's I don't know, Disney sus in terms of that.
Well, yeah, and it's like, I now that like Madison brought up all those points, it started making me think of the Mulan live action remake, which like both me and Madison watched it together, and like I just
very
didn't
forgettable.
Yeah, it was very forgettable, and it's like I like see that they were trying to appeal to both the American and the Chinese film market, which is like I feel like
there's
that's
a lot
so
to be said with that.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said with that. That's gonna end up in going into a whole conversation about that. But it's like, if you look at like the you know, behind the scenes, like the crew and like the main creatives, like they're all white people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know, because I don't really think of Mulan as a story meant for, like, you know, specifically, like, Asian people living in Asia, because I feel like it's so ingrained in, like, kind of Asian American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, yeah, like people growing up in Asia, here in the United States of America, but like as an Asian American. So I feel like Disney just did not understand that like at all and forgot that just like we existed. And so like creating that whole movie, it's like, okay, so like you're kind of creating it kind of like this wuxia film, which is the kind of like, you know, those like martial arts, like very flying around and like no sense of like gravity or like logic when it comes to the style of fighting, which is like, you know, that's like a very specific genre of film to make. But it's like, I feel like that's not a common thing that you would see in American media, which is unique in itself, but it's like a Disney film is supposed to be like entertaining, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like,
there's no clear storyline.
Yeah. It's just another part of the whole like doing things for profit rather than intention, and clearly not having people from the group you're supposedly trying to represent like at the helm and like controlling the project, because it never has. It's clear that the like intentions and the nuances are not there behind the scenes.
Which I feel like, because we've been talking a lot about kind of like the studio production of with the studio tackling on like representation, and they're always, it's always kind of like they're not quite there, but like I guess you're trying, but like you're, I don't, it doesn't seem genuine. But I feel like when it comes to like good representation, I feel like it goes down to like the indie level where people like literally like filmmakers are like, I'm just gonna straight up make this movie based on my experiences. Like when we talk about like Lulu Wang's like The Farewell, being like, I'm gonna make this story about me and my family lying to my grandmother in China. And like first of all, like Awkwafina's performance was like way out of left field. Like it was really good, but I was just not used to seeing a more like not Awkwafina in comedy. In a very like serious role. But the whole thing of like, you know, like they're switching the language between I'm not sure if they're speaking like Mandarin or Cantonese. Mandarin in the movie, and like English, and like having that whole like bilingual thing going on in the movie when she's when Awkwafina's character is talking to certain people. But also I feel like it explores the sense of individualism and collectivism in such an interesting way, because you have Awkwafina's character who's like, I want to tell my grandmother to get this guilt off my back, because you know, they're like, for all those who don't know the story, like Awkwafina is this character from New York City, and then she goes back to China with her family to like take care of her grandmother who's like dying of cancer, but no one wants to tell her she's dying of cancer. Like they're just there because they have a ploy that one of Awkwafina's cousins is getting married, so they're just letting her live her life just as usual without this like news like over her head. So there's this whole interesting like dynamic where Awkwafina is this like Asian American who is kind of in between the sense of like, do I do this for myself or am I doing this for my family? Where it's like, I want to tell my grandmother to get this guilt off my back, but if I tell my grandmother, then like the family is going to get, have all this, like the story is going to get more complicated. But in the end, it ends up being complicated anyway, because you're keeping this secret from the person who is like dying. So like, I don't know, like already, like there's, that's already a whole original story in and of itself, and it's based on an original thing, like it's based on an original or based on an actual experience of the filmmaker. This person, I don't think Lulu was like, oh yeah, I'm doing this for like Asian representation. I think she was literally just like, let me make a film.
Yeah, and it like, seems like the smaller indie level films are more, I mean, also at the same time, these films aren't as widespread, you know, like not as many people know about it, I feel like, versus like blockbuster movies, which are the ones that are kind of problematic sometimes.
Yeah. And then like, I think another kind of not a similar movie, but like kind of the whole thing of like the writer or the filmmaker just basing off their own experience, like Minari is like based on like moments that Lee Isaac Chung had like growing up with his family, and like that's all about a Korean American family living in like the South and like wanting to build a farm and everything. And it's like, that's such a very like quaint and small story, but like there are such strong messages talked about again about like, oh, again, like exploring the theme of family, but specifically like it is the family, or the Steven Yeun's character is all about like, am I doing what's best for the family or am I doing it just for myself? And like dealing with the themes of like the American dream and whatnot, living in, you know, the rural South. Like that's a very specific perspective that wanted to be presented. And yet, like, I don't think Lee Isaac Chung was like, I really want to represent Korean Americans well. Like he's just like, I just want to write this story. Yeah. So it's just kind of interesting how it's like they are very like these two filmmakers as examples are have very specific experiences that they wanted to touch upon, and yet they have such big messages that they want to say about it. And I feel like that should be what a representation is, like you're just a person who just wants to tell a story, mm-hmm. instead of like, oh, I have other intentions with it. Because like I don't think, like for me it's like I don't think like, oh yeah, like this is going to be really good for like Filipino Americans, like I'm going to represent my Filipino people well with it. And like that's not what I think about, and I don't think like white people are thinking about that either when they just want to write a story. They're like, the white perspective is really strong here, like I think it's going to be really good. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that thing. And then the whole like awards controversy with like the Farewell and Minari like being placed in like foreign language, yeah. categories, where it's when it's like literally if you live in America that is not a white space, you would see how many people are bilingual, and I am just monolingual trash that just like I wish I could be able to speak in like my parents' like mother tongue, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's, I mean, a whole other conversation.
It's just interesting, yeah. to me hearing you guys talk about your film school experience and how like that is basically the entertainment industry as a whole, but like small in the school, you know. Oh, that's, mm-hmm. yeah, wow.
But like, mm-hmm. that experience also manifests itself in like the broader film industry.
Yeah, like my thing is always like when I see like people like the Quentin Tarantinos of like the industry, or like even people like, I don't know, like the Russo bros, or just half the like white dudes who get handed a Blockbuster on a silver platter by a studio and it's like not great or whatever. I'm just like, I feel like that all really starts at the film school level, and like who's getting like the opportunities, who's getting like praised by their professors for doing like something mediocre, but just because it's like a white story. It's like that kind of like, you know, like the whole thing of like when you're a person of color, you have to like work twice as hard to get to that equal level with like a white person. And it's like seeing like, you know, people are always talking about like, oh, women can't make superhero movies, or like people of color can't make superhero movies. And it's like at this point we think white men can, because it's like the majority of superhero movies are made by white dudes, and like the majority of them are bad, like,
yeah, and they're a lot more mediocre. And it's like, again, I feel like when you lock in like Ryan Coogler making Black Panther, like when you lock in the perspective that you're trying to tell from, like that's where the superhero like movie comes to life, because it's like through the superhero genre that you're trying to present themes, right? Like that's all a genre is, like you're just trying to present certain themes and stories in a specific way.
And like, yeah, and it's like if people aren't challenged at the film school level, or aren't like put through that same like kind of thing of like that equal level of rigor to everybody, you know, where it's like you should like, because it's like on the one hand it produces a lot of really great creatives of color because they have to like cover all their bases, then on the other hand it's like you have a lot of working high up white creatives who can kind of do whatever, but then it's like praised as like, you know, the next big thing. And it's like, I feel like that really all comes down, like, and that obviously not everybody went to film school, you know, so it's like, this doesn't apply to everybody, but a lot of people do. And it's like, if that isn't like corrected at the film school level, then it's like, that person is just going to go work their way up Hollywood and like make the next Avengers Endgame or the next Game of Thrones final season or whatever, and everybody's just gonna be like, oh yeah, cool, that sucks, but like, yeah, and then like that's it. But it's like anytime a person of color makes something that level, it's like it has to be like Oscar worthy or else it was a waste of time and money.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really good rant. No, it was just so interesting hearing from your perspective.
Yeah, but to end, I guess, we wanted to ask you guys for Asian American film recommendations. I mean, you talked about, like, The Farewell.
Minari.
Yellow Rose, the one behind Christian's head.
Oh, yeah, I have a very big poster of Yellow Rose. And I feel like this film is not perfect, I feel like it's a good, like, a sense of representation for me because it's about a Filipino American living in the South, and I am a Filipino American from the South.
Gotta watch that.
Yeah, I haven't watched The Farewell or Minari, and I should.
That was really good. I think it's on Amazon.
Okay. I remember, I think Christiane told me to watch it like 2 years ago, and I just haven't.
Which one? The Farewell?
The Farewell.
Yeah, I think that's like up there with like all-time favorite movies. Like it's just so it walks like a really good line between like fun, like comedy. It's not a comedy, but like very funny moments that I feel like happens often, like when it comes to my family.
Yeah, do you have any film that you would recommend, Madison?
Oh my god, I'm so bad when I'm put on the spot.
I got one. Ali Wong's Always Be My Maybe with Randall Park is really good.
I did watch that one.
I love that one.
It's so funny.
Love that.
Yes. Oh, well, and then I guess it's not really a recommendation, but don't forget, this year we're getting two more people of color led Marvel movies because we're getting
Shang-Chi.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know, but with Simu Liu, love him. And then also we're getting The Eternals, which is directed by Chloe Zhao, but it also has like a lot of different people in the cast. Like, I think there's like Angelina Jolie is in it, but also like Kumail Nanjiani and oh my god, what's her name? I forgot her name. But
Also Chloe Zhao is nominated for Nomadland, which I really enjoyed, and it's on Hulu for you to watch.
I'm excited to see how Shang-Chi is.
There's still that martial art thingy going on there.
I feel like every time like an Asian country is portrayed in Marvel movies, it's just so bad. So I want to see.
It's always to be destroyed.
I have one more recommendation. The Half of It on Netflix written and directed by Alice Wu. It's Asian American and also queer.
Well, this isn't really about Asian Americans, but The Lovebirds on Netflix with
That's also a good movie.
Kumail Nanjiani, and who else is in it? I literally can't remember any actress's name.
His wife, or it's not his wife, but it's about his wife.
No, that's The Big Sick.
Oh, Big Sick. Never mind.
I'm going to look. Wait, hold on.
I have watched it.
Oh, it's Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae.
Oh, Lovebirds.
That's what I said. I said The Lovebirds.
Yeah, I was missing. Oh. I was out of it.
Okay, but I do also, since you brought it up, The Big Sick is also really good, but it has Kumail Nanjiani in it, and it's about him and his now wife in real life and stuff. Also, in terms of TV, Kim's Convenience on Netflix.
Oh, heck yeah.
Korean Canadian family, and also Simu Liu.
It's so good.
Then, now it's getting ended very abruptly and unfairly, and I'm mad, but you know.
Well, thank you for our recommendations and being on the podcast. But yeah, listen to Pineapple Headache, follow us on Instagram at Made in Hong Kong Pod. Yeah, thanks to Christy and Madison for being on here and ranting about film.
I'm always down to rant.
Yeah, if you want to hear more about us ranting about film, just listen to our podcast, Pineapple.
It's like literally like every other episode.
I love
that. Is every other episode like film or like racism? It feels like.
Yeah.
Or Catholic school drama.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good intersection.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Outro music.